tune in to Resonance FM for an oral. Oh God, I can't say this word. Do your ears need exercising? Tune in to Resonance 104.4 FM for an oral workout, or on the web on resonancefm.com. No, it's the perfect word for it, isn't it? And what was it for an oral?
This is The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston, on Resonance 104.4 FM. That was the sound last Tuesday evening of 2,500 London cyclists saying, "We're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore." It was a protest ride that came after a third London cyclist was killed on the streets of London in as many weeks. The ride was a memorial to Alan Neave, a 51-year-old Londoner who was killed riding his bike along High Holborn on Monday. And the most extraordinary thing in some ways about the protest ride and the sheer number of people who turned out was that it was just 36 hours after Alan's death. Such is the strength of feeling amongst London cyclists that things can't go on as they are. These kind of numbers you don't normally see, even on critical mass. It's extraordinary. Well done to everyone who turned out on the ride. Well done to the London Cycling Campaign for organising the ride. It was short and sharp with a very clear message that Londoners need more space for cycling. If you've not joined the London Cycling Campaign, then you should. It's not expensive and it's extremely worthwhile. The London Cycling Campaign is London's voice for cycling. Their work is essential in harrying the mayor to do what he says he's going to do, to make London a cycling city. If you can't join the London Cycling Campaign, then at least sign up to its email newsletter where you can find out about more actions and events. And if you don't live in London, and there are people who listen to The Bike Show who don't live in London, then join up to your own town or city's cycling campaign. And if it doesn't have one, then maybe you need to get together with a few like-minded souls and start one.
Dans chaque petit pays, c'est que le Tour de France par là passe aujourd'hui. Et les filles coquettes mettent leurs beaux atours, rêvant de faire la conquête dans les champions du Tour. Les gars du bourg rêvent d'être un jour à leur tour à du tout. Allez, voilà nos beaux Tours de France. Trévignant, on attend le cœur battant. Sur leur vélo, ils ont la cadence. Les voici aguerris, endurcis. Toutes ces gloires du sport ne craignent pas l'effort. Pour la France, c'est un réconfort. Oui, les voilà, nos chers Tours de France. Les voilà, les voilà, les voilà. Le jour de leur passage, de partout on afflue. Aussi dans le village, personne ne travaille plus. Les gosses quittent l'école, les hommes l'atelier. C'est une ivresse folle, on ne pense qu'à crier. Comme un putois quand on les voit, rangez-vous les voilà.
Les voilà, nos beaux Tours de France. Trépignant, on attend le cœur battant. Sur leur vélo, ils ont la cadence. Les voici aguerris, endurcis.
Toutes ces gloires du sport ne craignent pas l'effort. Pour la France, c'est un réconfort.
Oui, les voilà, nos chers Tours de France. Les voilà, les voilà, les voilà.
I don't know about you, but I think this year's Tour de France has been an absolute cracker. It was probably the best tour that I can remember watching. not just for the dominant and extremely aggressive riding of Chris Froome, the winner of the yellow jersey, and his Sky team, but for the way the other riders and teams approached the race. It was really exciting, there was a lot of tactics going on, and it felt like a new kind of Tour de France. An exciting course, exciting racing on almost every day from the very first day right up to the end. It only makes me sad that I wasn't able to be out there on the roadside watching it all, because that is really an experience. But someone who did make it out there is Buffalo Bill Chidley, regular correspondent on the Bike Show, former London bike messenger, bike poloist and bike blogger, and general man about town. He joins me on a Skype line together with his rather voluble cat to talk about his trip out to France. A week on bikes, taking the train. Oh, it sounds perfect. Bill, what gave you the idea to go out to watch the Tour de France by taking your bike on the train?
As soon as the route was announced, I spotted that Vontur was on the Sunday and Altjoers was on the Thursday following, and I know, because I've used it a few times, that there's a direct service from London to Avignon on which you can take your bike, a direct train, 6.5 hours, you know, relatively inexpensive, a much better option than getting a plane. And it was just blindingly obvious to me that you could easily ride from Avignon to Vontur on the Saturday, camp on the side of the mountain, be there on the Sunday, ride up to Alpe d'Huez. It's 2-3 day ride, easy. Some people can ride it in a day. And then on the Friday, ride back to Valence, get a local train on which you can put your bike back to Avignon on either the Friday or the Saturday. And then the direct train on Saturday afternoon in great comfort back to London.
In the olden days of French cycle touring, kind of probably before the turn of the 20th century, they referred to this early cycle tourists, referred to the train as le grand frère, the big brother who would help you, not the nasty Orwellian big brother, but the helpful big brother who would take you out of your Paris or your large urban area and deposit you in somewhere beautiful and help you make much more scenic bicycle tours. And the Eurostar has been great for us. There is this run that takes you down to the south of France once a week, isn't it, on a Saturday, and then obviously you can go to Paris and Lille and Brussels and that kind of thing. But Eurostar has rewritten its bike transportation policy of late, and that's caused some consternation amongst cyclists, hasn't it?
It did cause consternation in the peloton, to coin a phrase, because when I've used that service a few times to take bikes on, and it's never been a problem. So after I bought my tickets, they changed the policy so that you could only get bags on a maximum size of 85 centimetres, which clearly is not big enough for any bicycle that anyone has. I'm going to put him outside, actually, Jack. Excuse me.
Go on, off you go.
Yeah, so they changed their policy, and that was a source of great stress to me, because I sold the trip to a few other people, not sold it, but I encouraged a few other people to get tickets. So then I had a kind of war with them by email, and managed to get them to make the Avignon service an exception to this new rule, so that we were able to put our bikes on as before. I mean, it's still kind of annoying to put your bike into a bag and then, you know, schlep it around the platform, but it was far superior than not going at all.
And so is that exception just for you on that one train, or is that an exception for that whole run that goes down to the south of France in the summer?
At first they said it was an exception for us, that they guaranteed that we would get on, because I sort of played the sob story patriot card, you know, we're going to go and see our brave boys riding the Tour. But I think that actually it's for at the Avignon service and the direct service to the Alps as well, but no other service. It's, you have to put it in the baggage car. I don't really want to get into it, because Max Leonard's kind of covered it really, really well. He's been really active.
The basic message is check before you go, check with various people, check with Eurostar, but it is possible. It is possible.
It is possible. But I would say, even if you get a response in the negative, it's always worth emailing them, because I mean that was our experience. Like some of the people sort of basically get up on the trip. But I was like, no, I'm going to email and, you know, make a fuss. So yeah, my advice would be also email. If you get the response in the negative, email and see what's possible, because, you know, everything's possible really.
You were able to do a bit of cycle touring between from the Saturday to the Saturday and take in quite a lot of the tour.
Yes, we rode to Vontu and watched the Vontu stage on the Sunday, which is just amazing. I mean, being by the side of the road, I'd forgotten how mental the tour is. And it was a particularly interesting experience because there were so many Union Jacks there, which is totally new to me. I've never, ever seen so many Union Jacks on tour, you know, in France. I don't know, there was kind of a party atmosphere. We rode half a stage, which took us 2 days. It literally took us 2 days to ride half a stage. And one of our companions, who's totally new to the whole sort of cycle racing thing, did get a bit depressed by how quickly, because we went over one of the col before, it's Col de Meuge. It's about 1,000 meters. I mean, it's not a big col, but it's a proper col. And it took us like hours because we were fully laden tour. They went up in about 20 minutes and Fee got depressed by that. She wanted to know if there was any drugs that she could take that would make her go faster.
A bit late for that contemporary cycling. It's all clean now. Were you camping along the way or were you staying in boutique hotels?
It was definitely a sleeping in ditch affair. I mean, the first night we were pretty much in a ditch. And then we wild camped second, third, and fourth nights. I managed to pick up a tick as well on the fourth night.
You're not selling this. Sleeping in ditches, picking up ticks. Now, you must have camped in some beautiful places.
Yeah, we had a really great spot, which I'll be posting some pictures to my blog. And I'll post a picture of this spot that was just so beautiful. We were in this field, looking out over the valley towards Sisteron. And it was just phenomenal. It was really quiet. And you woke up in the morning and, yeah, with a fabulous view. Obviously left nothing behind. And then you just kind of hit the road again.
Wild camping is not strictly permitted in France, but it's very easily practiced. What are your tips for people who want to wild camp with success in France?
For this campsite I was just mentioning, or camping place that we found, I picked out on our route that we were going to cross one of the GR routes, which is the walking routes. There's a network of walking routes in France, which are marked out with normally with red and white horizontal stripes. And having seen that, I was like, well, it's obviously going into the park, so it's going up into the forest. And it seems logical that if you're on a, you know, a sentier like that, like a footpath, which goes a long way, goes for hundreds of kilometres across the countryside, that people will be camping by the side of the roads, by the side of the park. So that would be a good tip. Pick a GR, because they're generally decent footpaths, so you can get up the roads, you know, and go a fair distance away from, because we slept a couple of nights right by the side of the road and it wasn't very pleasant.
No, it's not fun. I mean, you get headlights going past and maybe the person is not meaning any harm, but it does feel like they might be meaning harm. It's just sort of unsettling to have the beam of headlights swing past you and the roar of a motor go past.
Yeah, I mean, we very much had that experience on the first night because we were literally by the side of the road up Vontu. So all tour traffic, the overnight tour traffic, the sort of stage finish guys and all the rest of it were going up that road in big trucks.
I mean, I find in wild camping in Britain that I look out for places where there's a bridle way that's crossing my route, because you can just disappear off it for even just a quarter of a mile and you'll be away. And you're allowed to be there because it's a bridle way. You're not strictly supposed to camp, but no one's going to see you. That's a good tip. Source of water, important? Is that important? Or were you carrying loads of bottles of water?
We had quite a lot of water with us. But as you get, I mean, it depends where you are. In the south, sort of around Avignon, where we got off the train, you want to be carrying quite a lot of water with you. because you aren't necessarily going to find sort of the sources that you find in little villages. But obviously, as you went up into the hills, then there's loads and loads of villages that have sources, like a source door, like a fountain in the village, which will be clean. So that wasn't really a problem for us.
And so you were just moving on every day to get to the Alps, really?
Yeah, yeah, to get to the Alpe d'Huez in time for the Thursday was kind of like our little race against the tour. I mean, they had a day off. They did a circuit as well, and they still, yeah, we only just got there in time.
So you made it?
Yeah, we made it, yeah. We made it up there on the Wednesday night, and I didn't go up Alpe d'Huez because I've been up it four times. And I know that it hurts your legs, but two of the guys did, and they said it was just phenomenal up there.
Because the tour this year went up it twice, and so it became this real central focal point. I mean, obviously the Ventoux as well, but it did seem, looking at the television pictures, like there were an enormous number of people out on the Alp.
Yeah, there were. It's also, the thing about Bordeaux-Saint in July is just, it's just packed with cyclists. It's teeming because there's the Marmot start, which is normally in the second weekend in July.
This is a cycle sportif.
Yeah, a cycle sportif that starts in Bordeaux-Saint, finishes on the Alp and does a big, big circuit. So you get all these Dutch people that come down in their thousands, tens of thousands, do the cycle sportif, and a lot of them just stick around for the tour if it's coming through, which it generally does. And there was Dutch people that had been there for 2 weeks getting drunk. Well, some of them have been getting drunk, some of them have been riding the hills. I mean, it's just a sea of lycra and Dutch beer. It's kind of weird.
Well, you got that impression from the television, this almost city on the hillside, this linear city of colour and beer and people with their tops off. And yeah, but the very strange thing about that stage was that they suddenly went over into this Col de Sarenne, and it was absolutely empty. There was nobody there, and it was suddenly this kind of alpine pastoral idyll, and it looked like I remember cycling across the Alps looked to me. There was nobody on the roadside. I think they banned it because they were worried about congestion, they worried about the effect on the wildlife, and it looked like suddenly they were all cycle touring, not in a race.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them were cornering like they were cycle touring, not in a race.
I spoke to a local there because we descended the Col d'Ornon, which is, there's a couple of overhangs on it, which I found absolutely terrifying. And I actually had to walk one section. And I was speaking to the mechanic in a bike shop in the village in Bordeaux-Saint. He was saying, yeah, Col d'Ornon is really, you know, it's nothing, but Sarenne is really dangerous. And I was thinking, oh my God, I mean, what is this climb like? I think that's part of the reason why they didn't want anyone there. One, it was really dangerous. And two, as you say, that it is a national park. People forget that the tour goes through national parks, and that's the massive desiccant right there. So that may be part of the reason. But there was loads and loads of rumours running around as well about if it rains, they're going to do this, and, you know, and it all turned out to be nonsense in the end.
And did you get to have a good look at the race as it goes through? Because my memory is that you don't really see anything.
For Mont Ventoux, we saw them come through at the bottom, and then we kind of couldn't really figure out what had happened because we were watching it on the TV. But somehow the fact that you're by the side of the road with all these other people becomes more important than the race itself, if you see what I mean, because you're all kind of involved in this group experience. It's kind of group hysteria. But at Alpe d'Huez stage, we waited in Bordeaux-Saint, and then we kind of watched the race on the TV. And when they came through, we rushed to the side of the road to applaud them. And then we saw the whole stage on the TV. But somehow, when you can hear the helicopter overhead, you're watching on TV, somehow it feels more immediate. It feels like you're there, even though you're not. I don't know. It's kind of a weird feeling. But you're kind of part of the event, but watching on TV as well, strange, a bit strange, yeah.
And so were you looking out to see the end of the stage every day as you were doing your kilometres and just try and stop at a bar tabac to watch what had happened?
Yeah, we tried to, well, we certainly watched the time trial stage on the TV, and the stage into Gap we saw on the TV as well, and the whole of Alpe d'Huez. But it can get a little bit tricky if you're riding And it's more important to get where you're going than stop and watch the tour. So it wasn't always possible, especially the times that tour's on, because that's the times when you don't want to ride through the middle of the day. You want to ride, sort of miss out in the middle of the day and ride in the afternoon. So it's not always possible, but it sort of doesn't matter because you're having such a great time on the bike. On the Friday, we rode out Bourg-d'Oisans. Didn't have time to watch the stage start because we needed to be in Valence. We're riding down the road towards Grenoble, and there's all this tour traffic coming past us. The tour buses and the team buses and the technical vans. And they kind of followed us, and they're tooting us as they're going past, sort of in a friendly way. And it made you feel like part of the race kind of. And when we, because we turned to go towards Valence when we got to Grenoble, and all the tour traffic went the other way. And one of the guys was like, "Wow, I wish I was going where the tour's going. I don't want to leave the tour." You know, even it's kind of unpleasant being on this narrow mountain road with a great big bus screaming past you. I said to one of the guys when we were there that you kind of, when you're in the tour bubble, you suspend all moral value judgment, because I mean, really, a tour is a horrifying spectacle, but somehow, because there's a little bit of bike racing, it just seems fantastic.
So what were your highlights of the race itself?
I would say Riblon's victory on Alpe d'Huez. I mean, I cried. I think everyone didn't. Did anyone? I mean, is there anyone who didn't cry when the Riblon won? I mean, I just thought it was an awesome ride, and it just had everything, because the French were just beside themselves. It meant a lot to him anyway, but it meant a lot that he was the first stage winner for France and also that stage. And the way that he did it, I mean, everyone has ever dreamed of winning a tour stage. That's the way you want to do it. You know, you counterattack up to the leader, blow straight past him, finish in splendid isolation and out to you. I mean, that was just, I was very, very moved by it. And it reminded me, like you, it reminded me of, you know, tours from the 80s.
No, that was a great stage. There was a lot of really good racing. The stage when Omega Pharma Quickstep initiated a split in the crosswinds, and then Mark Cavendish went on to win from a breakaway, essentially, or at least a small group. I mean, that was a tremendous stage, and that, you know, you might say that was one of his greatest ever wins. He's got a lot of wins to choose from.
Seemed much more tactical this year. And I think it was significant that the day after Sky appeared to have completely annihilated the competition, it turns out that actually they were on their hands and knees. So the second day in the Pyrenees, when Froome was isolated with 100 kilometres to go, because we were all thinking, oh, this is just like, I was anyway, this is just like USPS and Indurain, and sort of feeling a little bit uneasy to see such complete domination. And the fact that the other teams came out the following day and absolutely destroyed Sky is really a positive thing for the sport, I think. I mean, we're all assuming that Sky aren't dopes, but, you know, tactically, I thought it was just brilliant that day, what the other teams did.
And how were the French dealing with this British dominance for the second year running?
I don't know. I mean, I overheard two fat old French guys in a bar smoking cigarettes saying that, you know, Froome is definitely doped and his victory on Vontoux was even worse than Pantani's. And so that's one view. I think the French are always really proud that their bike race is considered to be so important by other nations. So the fact that the British have finally got it, you know, 20 years after the Americans, I'm sure it's a source of pride for them. But it always is a problem that the French riders don't do so well. I mean, it's not getting on to be like Wimbledon, but it is becoming that sort of burden. When is there going to be the next French tour winner? I mean, you know, Eno is visibly graying and turning into an old man. Fignon is dead already. And then, you know, and then who else is there? You know, Thévenet? And that is a problem. That is a problem. The French, at a certain point, if the French riders continue to do badly, the French public will become disenchanted.
And how was your reception as British cyclotourists in France? Were you cheered along?
That's part of the magic of going to the tour, is that every single French person, bar one that we had an experience with, every single one would honk the horn, wind down the window, and actually put their hands out and applaud us as they were going past. People by the side of the roads would go, "Allé, allé." You know, everyone was cheering us on, and we felt like we were in the race. I mean, that's a fantastic thing. It's as if France, for 3 weeks, just falls completely in love with the bicycle, and anything to do with the bicycle is great.
And so for next year, the tour starts in Yorkshire. You're going to be heading up to Yorkshire. It's not such a long train journey.
To me, the appeal of Yorkshire isn't quite as great as Provence.
Why is that, Bill?
Well, my mum was born in Provence, so like for me to go to Provence is like almost like going home, whereas I don't really have the same familial ties with Yorkshire.
That was tactfully put.
Mm.
That was Buffalo Bill Chidley talking about his exploits watching this year's Tour de France while cycle touring in the French countryside. And one person who is a little more excited than Bill, well, a lot more excited than Bill about the tour coming to Yorkshire, is Peter Cozins, who is a cycling journalist and is the editor of the official tour history, which we talked about on the show a few weeks ago. Peter lives in Yorkshire, and he told me that he's pretty excited that next year the Tour de France will be coming to him.
The Tour de France is going to be passing on the road just down below where I live, and I can tell you everybody in Ilkley and in West Yorkshire and North Yorkshire are absolutely, there's tour fever sweeping through. So I'm sure the love that everybody's got for the tour at the moment is only going to increase next year when it actually comes to Britain.
And so in Yorkshire, will it be riding some of the favourite climbs of club cyclists up there?
On the second stage, there are some. They're going over Crag Vale, they're going up Home Moss. On the first stage...
It's pretty flat, isn't it?
Well, they say it's flat, but...
It's never flat in Yorkshire. That's what I've learned. The hard way.
They're going over Buttertubs just outside Hall, which anybody who knows that climb will know that Buttertubs is far from flat. I think the last 70k of the stage into Harrogate are pretty flat. And I mean, Harrogate's where Cam's mum is from. And obviously everybody's looking. He didn't get the yellow jersey this year in Bastia, unfortunately. But it would be a great story if he could win it next year in his mum's hometown.
But they're not going up the buttress in Hebden Bridge, are they? That extraordinary cobbled lane. Wouldn't it be great if they did? Or do you think you'd have a rider strike on your hands?
I know I was talking to Gary Verity from Yorkshire, Welcome to Yorkshire, the other day, and he was talking about Thierry Gouvenou, who comes out from the tour organisation to look over the route and work out where to take it. And he took them out to, I don't know whether you know, there's just by Kettlewell, there's a climb, Park Rash, which is got hairpins on it that are one in four, 25%. And it goes over into Coverdale. So they could actually have taken the race over this climb, but it was just too narrow. But Thierry Gouvenou was just saying, "This is fantastic. We would love to bring the tour over here, but unfortunately, half the vehicles won't get up there." But it would have been nice if we'd seen them taking up some of the more severe stuff. But obviously, they don't want to completely...
Yeah, they don't want to blow the race apart in the first day, do they, really?
I mean, that said, that second stage into Sheffield it certainly could blow the race apart. I mean, some people are going to struggle that day, I think, because it comes so early. A bit like they did this year in Corsica. I mean, I know most of the riders finished up towards the front, but I think the Sheffield stage might be a bit more difficult because there's quite a steep climb very close to the finish in Sheffield. And I was talking to Malcolm Elliott about it, who's obviously from Sheffield. And he was saying he thought that it's the kind of thing that Sagan and punchers like him could cope with, but it might catch out one or two people.
I was talking with Peter Cozins. And of course, if you want a dry run of watching a bike race while out cycle touring, there's always the Tour of Britain coming up in September. And it's got some excellent stages down in Devon, but also here in Wales. So why not pack your panniers, get your tent, hit the road and join the fun. That's it for the bike show this week. My name's Jack Thurston. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.